there are bag rats. And then there are caddies.
Baby.
Pro jocks who are legends in caddy shacks across the PGA Tour.
While we can neither confirm nor deny the existence of this legendary looper,
here he is, the caddy on Real Golf Radio.
Yeah, the caddy has grabbed the flag off of 18 after his player won this very Players' Championship. So this is a guy that knows a little something about this golf course. Caddy, how are you?
Oh, yeah, this is a fun thing for me to watch. It's reliving memories. I can't believe it, how long ago it was. It was, let's just say it might have been a couple decades ago since this happened. Yeah. But I like this place. It's a major. Come on, it's a major, isn't it? You know it's a major. It's a major.
Well, it's considered the fifth major.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's four majors and the Players is the fifth. Okay. We're good to go. Next subject.
Hey, you heard Scotty talking about 17. I mean, what a great comment, right? Where you're standing on the range singing, this shouldn't even be a worry. And then you get on the tee, it's a different story, huh?
It's so easy on Monday and Tuesday, and it looks so easy. And it is amazing how is it so hard on Saturday and Sunday? Yeah, he couldn't have said it better. That's exactly what it's like. It's exactly what it's like.
It's interesting. When they first started playing that Players' Championship at TPC Sawgrass, I can remember I was with my dad on the PGA Tour Champions, and Don January had played in the event. Everybody was saying, well, what's it like, 17? And everything. And Don January said, it's the only golf course that I know of when you stand on the first tee and you're getting ready to hit your drive, you're thinking about the 17th hole already.
Yeah, as a caddy, you're thinking about Wednesday on 17 before you even get to the tournament. So that's how bad it is for caddies. Anyway, we're talking about
the caddy tournament. The caddy tournament, right?
Yeah.
Here's the thought about 17. If you took a plank of wood that was about 2 or 3 feet wide and fairly thick and laid it down on your floor or outside in front of your house, and it was 30 feet long and you walked across it, you walked down it, right? Would you ever have a problem walking across that? Would you ever fall off it? You could ride your bike across it. You could run across it. You could run backwards. No problem, right? You're never going to leave that plank of wood that's 3 feet wide. But if I elevate that 100 feet in the air, now do it. That's the difference between Tuesday and Sunday. That's the 17th. It's all mental, folks.
Oh, that's funny. That's a good analogy.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's how it is. It just, can you get over that? And there are some flying Willendas who can do it. And then, if you fail, it's a pretty big consequence.
You know, it's really cool. What's really crazy about that hole also is when you look at it from the tee, you can see the water in front and the water to the sides. But you hit it too long, and it's a one bounce over that green and into the water, which you don't ever see.
My player, the year he won, hit in the final round, hit an absolute, like the perfect shot. It was blowing too. It was left to right hurt. It was not easy. And the ball was in the air and I was watching it and I thought, you know what? He might've just made a hole in one. It's going to hit pin high. It's going to catch that slope. It's crispy and fast. It's going to trickle down there. This is the most amazing shot under pressure. It flew a couple, maybe two steps further than we thought. That's not a very bad miss, is it? Two steps? And it almost ended up in the water. And I couldn't have imagined a better shot. And it almost ended up over the green in the water like you're describing, Bob. It's just, man, it's something else. Who I still think maybe it was John Mahaffey had the line. Somebody way back when said it's the easiest par five on the course.
Hey, a couple of things have gone on this week. One of the things I wanted to get your opinion on is Rory's first round drops that he had and trying to determine if they were taken correctly, and the fact that Spieth and Hovland were in on the conversation and that they didn't speak to the media afterwards. It just has made a lot of people, you know, question whether or not that was the right thing to do. The way I look at it, it's a big old nothing burger, although it is interesting for fans and golfers to be able to listen to the way tour pros handle that kind of a situation, because sometime we'll find ourselves in a similar situation helping out a player that we're playing with take a drop. Given all the things that went on, let's just focus on seven, for instance, because, I mean, I don't know if you saw the live from guys afterwards. Johnson Wagner was out there pitching golf balls in there trying to replicate bounces to show exactly what might have happened or what a camera could have picked up or not picked up. I sort of had to chuckle a little bit about how geeky we are sometimes about this whole thing. Did it cross? Yeah, we think it's about here. Drop it, play on. And yet it turned into we almost had a national disaster. Like, we almost had to declare a state of emergency there around the Jacksonville area because of what went on.
I think the TV guys just salivate when something like that happens, because think about the amount of time they have to fill on the air on the Golf Channel talking about the same thing over and over and over, and trying to do a different analysis or trying to throw another angle. That's why you might complain about, gosh, I can't stand that guy on the Golf Channel. He keeps doing, well, they got to talk for 8 hours about, there's only so much to talk about. So when something like this happens, the media loves it. And then, of course, you have all the hall monitors at home who have to chime in on Twitter about, you know, what everybody in the world who's the best at what they do are doing wrong while they're shooting 98 at their home club. And it just opens up so much cool stuff. But here's some insight from the tour about this situation, which is basically judging where a ball last crossed the hazard. It's that simple, right? You're trying to make a judgment. Well, first of all, on a lot of tee shots, you're anywhere from 100 to almost 300 yards away from where that thing lands. And it's not that easy to judge with your eyeball where something's bending and curving and crossing. And eyewitness testimony and our eyewitness evidence in the scientific world is just not used. You don't even use it. It's like the worst thing ever. Oh, I saw that person. That was him. It definitely crossed here. I saw it cross here. You can pretty much throw that out. So, unfortunately, you have to use that to make these judgments. So it's, unless you have a camera showing the flight of the ball, it's all subjective opinion. That's the problem. Now, even sometimes cameras will deceive. You can get a bad camera angle. It can make it look here when it's really there. There's lots of stories about that too. So what you have to do in golf is rely on the integrity of the player to
and players in the group and players in the group as well.
So what I don't really know, believe it or not, I can tell you on tour, I can't count the number of times somebody asked me, hey, have you ever called out a player for taking a drop where he shouldn't have? And I said, no. And here's why. It's because unless it's a physical impossibility that it couldn't have crossed over there, which can happen, you can have a physical impossibility, it's a matter of opinion at that point in time. And so you do see there's plenty of times when guys will go, oh yeah, you know, they'll be playing with the guy. You'll get done. And then they'll be complaining about how he fudged the drop. And I'll be like, well, why didn't you say something? If he didn't like where he dropped it, confront the guy, right? So there is a little bit of that can go on now and then. I've seen it a fair number of times over 25 or 30 years. But it's not real prevalent. They're human beings are all different. Some people bend the rules. Some people break the rules. Some people punish themselves with the rules. There's all different kinds of people. And I think the way Rory handled it, I didn't really see 18. I saw where he hit his third shot from, which was spectacular. 290 yards out, knocked it on the green. Are you kidding me? But I watched number seven quite a bit, and I thought he handled it really well. I wasn't really sure what Jordan was saying. I'm not sure what he was, you know, doing, but in the group, everybody wants to make sure you make the best judgment on the shot. And that left side of that hole there, you can't, if you're, unless you're standing there in that little gap between the bunker and the water, you can't see a thing from the right side. You would have no idea where that crossed, 0.0 idea where it crossed from anywhere to the right of that bunker. Even if you were standing on the left of the fairway, you couldn't tell where that is. Because it's a hill. It's a downhill. It's a pretty good down. It's probably 4 or 5 feet down to the water from the top of that hill. You could see it. It's physically blocked. So I don't know if there was a marshal or, but even if there was somebody standing out there down the left side, which I doubt there was, because that's very much in the field of view and you wouldn't want someone standing there if you were a player. But if there was someone standing there watching it, it's still the hazard line's like a foot and a half above the water. It's very rare that it would hit between the hazard line and the water itself. It would almost 99% of the time, 95% of the time, it's going to hit above the hazard line and then bounce over. So the drop is more a matter of not whether it crossed the red line, but how far did it go when it bounced and landed left. And if you watch the video with the bunkers on number six in the reference in the background, he looked like he dropped it in an absolutely exact place.
Yeah.
Exact. It was a great judgment on his part, yeah. I thought. And I think the kind of amusing part for me watching it is just how many people can get riled up about it who have no idea what they're talking about.
And you're right about Jordan. Yeah. He's walking over saying, we got eyewitnesses over here that these people are all saying, and I love, Rory's caddy that said, who are these people? I love that.
Harry Diamond would have a line of the day right there.
Who are these people?
No, I think Jordan said something like, everybody's saying, and yeah. Harry goes, who is everybody?
Yeah, that's it. I mean,
so, you know, so I thought Harry was going to take off his hat and start waving it and saying, who do you think you are? Just making a Ryder Cup. I won't go there.
Yeah, I see. I see what you did there. Yeah, nice job.
You know what I'm
saying. So, Caddy, it's been really fun this week because we've been getting commentary, or the last couple of weeks, we've been getting video and commentary from you on what was happening with golf. And today, you sent out a little video to me and Brian of Wyndham Clark, and you say, okay, why is he playing so well? Da, 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 and he turns through and he goes, there it is. It's the yardage book. How important is that yardage book for players?
Well, as you know, I cannot give an unbiased opinion on this subject, but I'll tell you how important. Here's what I'd like to do. Let's go back to greens books. We get greens books, yardage books, and golf clubs, or on the first tee of a competitive event. If I said to the caddy and the player, you've got to give me two of three things, yardage book, greens book, or one of your golf clubs, and then you can go play. I bet you a significant percentage of the field would give you the greens book and a golf club and keep the yardage book out there with them. That's how important the yardage book is.
Wow.
It may be, it's a big deal for these guys to have that. I mean, it's dialed in. They know within a yard or two all the time exactly how far they have to go. It's a very precise world they live in, and they are that good when they're on, where 133 and 135 can make all the difference. That happened to us. That's a perfect example of at the Players that year I'm talking about. If the number had been two less, we would have hit one club less on 17. 2 yards less, and we would have hit a different club. So that's how big a deal it is to have that thing. And they've got all their notes in there. Look, how many times you watch on TV, you probably can't go more than a minute or two on TV without seeing somebody looking in that book. I'm watching right now, and I'm seeing two caddies staring in the book on the green as Rory's getting ready to putt. What they're doing is they're looking at the next hole right now. They're looking at the tee. They're thinking about the tee location. They're looking at the hole. There they are. They're both looking at the book right now. They're staring at it. I mean, it's a big deal. That's all.
Hey, what do you make of Wyndham Clark and what he's doing right now? I mean, 65-65. He played well last week at Bay Hill. Seems to be trending a little bit. Won at a shortened event at Pebble. And obviously, he's the reigning U.S. Open champ. I mean, this is a guy we really didn't know a whole lot about until he's just kind of gone on a tear of late. What's your thoughts on what you've seen out of Wyndham this week and the kind of player that he is?
Well, I haven't seen him in person hit a golf ball, but I've certainly watched what everybody else has. I know his story and his background. I live in Denver now. He's from here, so I've certainly heard my fair share of Wyndham Clark stories. And the guy is... he's all that. He's the real deal. There's no question he could be number one in the world. He's that good. He's over good. He's Phil Mickelson coming out of college. Maybe not quite to that level, but I mean, you pick the best guy coming out of college that who were very successful, Bryson DeChambeau, those kind of guys. He's the real deal. He had some interesting struggles, having to do with his mom and his family and things like that, that, you know, he had to get through. And I think that slowed him down in college from being, you know, that guy who was coming out that everybody knew about. But he's figured it out and he seems to have it going, you know, everything in place. And what a game. What a beautiful golf swing. It's a flawless golf swing. It's unbelievably powerful. He hits it miles. He can flat out putt. He's got a look at the U.S. Open. How good was his short game on Sunday? He never flinched.
That was the amazing thing at L.A. You kept thinking he's going to do something under the pressure. And all he did was, I mean, he was stone cold, man. I mean, the guy was just... everything was good. That was impressive.
Yep. I would so buy his stock if he was a company. It's not even funny.
I like that. Yep. All right. Well, you got Scottie Scheffler, who seemed to have found a putter and ran away with Bay Hill last week. You got Wyndham Clark that's certainly trending, and he's in a good position going into the weekend this week. And the Masters is coming up in 3 weeks. So it's all good stuff. That's exciting.
Yeah, it's going to be a great event to watch. And look, Wyndham's off to a great start, and he's going to be tough to catch. But we are talking about TPC Sawgrass, where you can have a six-shot swing in a hole and a half. Yeah. And it can happen to the best of them. So don't turn off the TVs.
I like that. Parting advice.
Just keep watching.
From America's favorite caddy. Caddy, thanks so much, man. Always good to visit with you. And enjoy the weekend of the players.
Thank you, gentlemen.
There you go. That's the caddy right here on Real Golf Radio.